Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's Mona Montgomery broadcasting to you from beautiful downtown Glendale. More information regarding the Hola hoax. Did you know there were no gas chambers in Germany? Did you know Hitler had no plan to exterminate the Jews? That the so-called final solution was merely a plan on his part to transport them to their long yearned for homeland to the east of Europe. And 6 million did not die. The only people who died in the concentration camps were the same number and type of people who died in any prisoner of war situation. But how, you ask, could such a lie be told? And how could people believe it for so long? The answer lies in the inception of Israel, which is a fraud, rogue, terrorist state, built on fraud, conceived by fraud, and having once created its fraudulent self, has become the worst threat to world peace of any state in existence today. Israel's atrocities against the Palestinians are legendary, and the United States is one more time going to have to pick up the bill. Because we, ladies and gentlemen, have been hijacked by Jews. In 1901, the area in Palestine only had 1% Jews. What a phenomenon to see that number rise to over 50% by 1950. How could such a change occur? Only by a carefully thought out and implemented fraudulent scam to first assassinate and then to bilk and then to assassinate again the good white race. Who were the perpetrators of the scam? Worldwide communism, who manufactured a Jewish nation and then allied themselves with the so-called persecuted minority in order to establish their world headquarters in Israel. The first step was to gain control of Israel. The Jews, whether legitimate or not, were a perfect ploy. The Jews had the same Bible as the white Christians, and were able to pick out a few verses that they relied on that said they owned the land, even though they had left the land 2,000 years ago. They took these verses out of context, showed them to good Christians, and convinced fundamentalist Christians, who are not very bright anyway, that God wanted them to have Israel. During this time in history, the various European states were fighting with each other. Germany, Russia, England, France, Belgium. And the Jews took this opportunity to convince people in high places that the Jews, who were not welcome anywhere they went, should have their own homeland state in Israel. At that time, the Ottoman Empire was a protectorate of England. England had washed her hands of trying to bring peace to the area. So Palestine was just sitting there, inhabited by Arabs, serving no particular purpose for the white race. Lord Balfour of England made a deal with international Jewry. If the Jews could convince the Americans to fight on England's side against Germany, England would give up her interest in Palestine and turn it over to the Jews. This seemed like a good idea to everyone except the Palestinians, who demanded that they not be kicked off their own land, where they had been living for 2,000 years. So Lord Balfour said, "We will take only half of Palestine, giving half to the Jews and half to you." Ben-Gurion never intended to honor the partition plan. Ben-Gurion, the prime minister of the Jews, intended to take the entire region for the Jews, from Egypt all the way up to Iraq. But he agreed to take only his half of the area as designated by the partition plan. He always intended to expand. Ben-Gurion carefully qualified his acceptance of the partition scheme put forth by the British in the late 1930s. Quote, "The Jewish state now being offered to us is not the Zionist objective. Within this area, it is not possible to solve the Jewish question, but it can serve as a decisive stage along the path to greater Zionist implementation. It will consolidate in Palestine, within the shortest possible time, the real Jewish force which will lead us to our historic goal." Unquote. Ben-Gurion amplified this point in a letter to his son. Quote, "I have no doubt that our army will be among the world's outstanding, and so I am certain that we won't be constrained from settling in the rest of the country, whether out of accord and mutual understanding with the Arabs or otherwise." Unquote. As early as the 1930s, the Jews had decided to take all of the land from Egypt to Iraq, and their acceptance of the partition plan was never sincere. Speaking of the Zionists, I learned today by reading my new book, Image and Reality of the Israel-Palestine Conflict, by Norman J. Finkelstein, and by talking to a chatter who is an eyewitness to the 1947 war. The 1947 war, remember, you've been told that Israel moved in totally peacefully and that she was attacked on all sides for no reason whatsoever by five Arab states, and that's why she just had to take over Palestine's property to the tune of over 50% of what was allocated to Palestine. You know the story. You've heard it often enough, right? Well, it's a big fat lie. Surprise, surprise. The raping and the pillaging, which the Jews did in Russia, did not stop suddenly and magically just because they were given Israel. They continued with their rapes and pillages and drove guess how many Palestinians out of the Israeli portion of the partition plan? 700,000. 700,000 innocent Palestinian residents were driven out of the Israel side of the partition plan through the use of weapons, rapes, murders, gassings, threats, anything you can imagine. They took all of the talents that they had learned when they were driving the Germans out of Russia. They applied the same techniques to the Palestinians when these saint-like humanitarians were given as a gift the Israeli side of the partition plan. Now, it was predicated, by the way, on the understanding that they would not do that, that they would give human and civil rights to the resident Palestinians. But instead, they used rape and pillage and murder to get them over to their own side of the partition plan. And as if that wasn't enough, they then, in response to the natural attack that was visited on them because of this raping and pillaging and violence, extended their boundaries by fully 50% of the Palestinian side of the partition plan. So now they had not only wiped out the Palestinians from their side, but had moved over to 50% of the Palestinian side. Get it? 20 years later, they have another war, and they completely invade the entire portion of the Palestinian side. So now the Palestinians have nothing. And you get mad at them because they throw rocks at the bulldozers? I don't think you guys have been told the truth about this situation. But you know, this is one of the falsehoods that we're told, that poor, sweet, innocent Israel landed and then they were attacked by five Arab nations. Well, that and then when you say, well, what happened to the 700 Palestinians? They say, oh, the Arabs told them to leave. We didn't expel them. They just left voluntarily. But I'd like to quote to you from what one of the, since you think I'm so stupid, this is what an author named Simha Flappin says in his book, The Birth of Israel. Quote, well, what he's going to tell you is that it's ridiculous to believe that the Arabs told the Palestinians to leave their own homes, because the Arabs needed the Palestinians to stay there and help and fight. But he puts it better than I do. He says, quote, from the point of view of military logistics, the contention that the Palestinian Arab leadership appealed to the Arab masses to leave their homes in order to open the way for their invading armies, after which they would return to share in the victory, makes no sense at all. The Arab armies, coming long distances and operating in and from the Arab areas of Palestine, needed the help of the local population for food, fuel, water, transport, manpower, and information. And then, when you go and you take a look at the massacres that the Israelis perpetrated against the Palestinians, you see example after example of cities that were taken over with arms, with guns, with small bombs. They raped people. They threatened people. They forced them to leave their homes. And they were thrilled about it. David Ben-Gurion talks about how happy he was to see the Arabs leave. He was just thrilled, because he believed from the beginning that the Jews should own the entire amount of property all the way from Egypt to Iraq, and that they only accepted the partition plan as the first step toward taking over the entire area, and they had never intended to tolerate the Palestinians. So the first step was to drive the Palestinians away from the Israeli side. The second step was to take over the Palestinian side. And they have done that. And that's why the Palestinians keep throwing rocks at their bulldozers. They have stolen their home. The reason I only talk about Israeli atrocities is because Israel is the perpetrator. Palestine is the victim. This is not an even-handed war here between Israel and Palestine. In 1947, when Israel moved in, she was given by the United Nations 50% of the territory. She now possesses 100% of the territory because she has engaged in a giant, illegal land grab against the Palestinians. The Palestinians are only fighting to protect their own property against the invasion of the Israelis. And it started the day the Israelis landed to take over Israel. Most people don't know that their agreement with the United Nations was to stay on their side of the boundary and not to expel the resident Palestinians that were living on the Israeli side. Did you know that? Did you know that the original agreement was that Israel was to be allowed to have the land, half of the land, but was supposed to tolerate the resident Palestinians? Guess how many Palestinians were pushed out of the Israeli side of the territory within the first 2 years by use of rape, force, and murder? 700,000. That's 250,000 Palestinians were forced to leave their homes that were residents on the Israeli side of the partition plan. Then the Israelis pushed the borders a 50% over onto the Palestinian side, taking unto themselves 75% of the territory, which was only supposed to be 50%. Okay? So now you've got them having raped and killed and pushed off. They called it expelling 700,000 Palestinians and then taking 50% of the Palestine land. The next war resulted in the Israelis what they call occupying the rest of the 25% of Palestine's land, leaving Palestine with zero land. What the Israelis have done is they say, oh, we were attacked by a terrorist. Well, a terrorist being somebody who's living in his own home and is basically shooting a burglar. We have been attacked by a terrorist. So they bulldoze areas in the Palestinian section, which they are now occupying and have no right to be in, and then they build up a high-rise building and move into it. So I think that Israel is clearly the perpetrator and Palestine is clearly the victim. And I haven't even mentioned the land grab that they attempted against southern Lebanon, which was finally repelled after 20 years, and the Golan Heights that they took from Syria, which they still own. I don't like Israel because they weren't grateful for what they were given. They have committed hideous atrocities against the Palestinians, and their clear intent is to take all of the land from Egypt to Iraq. And I personally blame them for this attack against Iraq. The communists had to kill 65 million of their own people in order to enforce the communist regime. The communists had to build a wall around their country in order to force people to stay in and continue living under the communist regime. What we're looking at is communism, not Nazism. Nazism was pathetically inadequate if you're looking for a major world perpetrator compared to the communists, and nobody ever wants to talk about the communists for some reason. And I think it's very important to know who the real devil is in the situation. What we're looking at is much more like the communist oppression of its own people than the Nazi oppression of the enemies of the state, which were the Jewish communists. Hitler's been misrepresented as hating Jews because they were unattractive. The truth is the Jews in Germany were communists and were trying to bring the oppression of communism into Germany, and he didn't want it. So under the rules of international law, he had the right to put them in detention centers, and he did. And all of the atrocity propaganda that's come out of that war is pretty much propaganda, communist propaganda at that. So I just wanted to make that little notation. Us taking the position of being the world determiners of morality, this has to be done by the world. We're going against the enemy of our friend. So it isn't even as if we're just randomly selecting one evil country to start this beautiful cleanup campaign. We have targeted Israel's arch enemy, and we are fighting Israel's war, and the whole world knows it. And that's why the world says, America, you're not being fair, because we're not. This has nothing to do with cleaning up Iraq or saving Iraq's people or anything like that. If that were the case, we would be working with the United Nations to clean up the world. That's what United Nations is for. The truth is, we are fighting a war on behalf of our friend Israel, who is a rogue terrorist state, and we're doing it against a country that can't defend itself because Israel wants to be in charge of the Middle East. And we've decided to side with Israel in spite of the fact and in the face of 31 resolutions signed by every signatory in the Security Council and vetoed by us to stop the atrocities against the Palestinians. It's clearly cowardly for us to fight Iraq and not stand up against Israel. Israel is in much, much more egregious violation of United Nations resolutions, and the United Nations has been trying desperately to get us to agree to go in and put a stop to those violations of the law. But we're afraid of Israel because Israel is our friend, and we, this big, wonderful bully of a country that we have become, don't have the moral courage to tell our friend that we're not going to put up with our friend's cruelties anymore. We are being dominated by our friend. There's nothing more cowardly than a person who can't tell their friend that their friend is in the wrong. So rather than stand up to Israel, even though we would have the backing of the entire United Nations behind us, they've asked us 31 times to sign this resolution that's been signed by all of the signatories of the Security Council, and rather than risk the wrath of our dear friend Israel, we have refused to sign those resolutions, but we are ready, against the United Nations resolutions, to fight poor little Iraq. And we will cite that they've made a mistake. They have violated a United Nations resolution, and so we're going to attack them. But Israel, who has violated over 100 resolutions, and who 31 times the United Nations has asked us to discipline, we do not have the courage to discipline. That is a coward. That is a bully. That makes the United States a world leader who has just lost her position as world leader because nobody respects a coward and a bully. And that is what we are today. How do I feel about the war? I feel about this attack exactly the way I felt the day before they firebombed the Qureshians. For 56 days, I had been calling the FBI, telling them, please don't attack the Qureshians. There's obviously some agenda going on. And when I called, first I called the Attorney General's office every day, and guess what? There was no Attorney General at that time in America. There was no Attorney General, and the only one you could report this kind of thing to was the Attorney General. So the Attorney General turned over my calls to the FBI, who was the perpetrator of the crime against the Qureshians. I'm talking about David Koresh in Waco, Texas. If you'll recall, the ATF went in and basically massacred the compound. There were some deaths, and then the FBI took over, and it was clear to me that the FBI was going to cover up the crime of the ATF. So we waited 56 days every day. I'm sure it wasn't the first time. But what I'm saying is, it's very, very cruel to us as Americans to have to sit back and watch the genocide of the Iraqis. It's cruel to us. It beats us down. It demoralizes us. We know that abuse of children is a terrible thing, but what we're learning with study is that the child who has to watch the other child get killed is also badly damaged. And we as Americans have had to stand by and watch these rogue elements in our government perpetrate hideous massacres, first against our own people and now against innocent countries like Iraq, in order to satiate some kind of bloodlust. And it's an abuse against us. We are going to have to stand by helplessly and watch our country commit genocide on another country for no good reason, and it's going to hurt us. We certainly need to put America first, and we certainly need not to be cowards. But I think we are putting America first when we refuse to do what Israel wants us to do. Three men have been put in jail for saying what I'm about to say. This war serves nobody but Israel. It puts America second. It puts Israel first. Two politicians have been taken out of their positions of leadership for saying this too. The most recent one is Jim Moran, who said, if it were not for the Israeli control of the American government, we would not be going into war against Iraq. He was immediately stripped of his position as representative whip. And we all know that. Trent Locke, the same story. Same thing. They demonized David Duke. They demonized Matt Hale, put him in jail. They demonized Ernst Zundel, who's the most peaceful person in the world and has done nothing to offend anybody except to say, America is under the control of Israel. Nobody should be demonized. Nobody should have to be considered a satanic personality just because they don't have the political opinion that you have. David Duke has harmed no one. David Duke has come out strongly against multiculturalism and diversity. And yes, he was the Grand Wizard of the KKK. The KKK is an ancient group which was fighting against multiculturalism and diversity in the 50s because the Supreme Court said Christians could no longer preach that white people had the right to be exclusive. That it's not worth demonizing somebody by. Not everybody thinks that diversity is a strength. You can support diversity, but that doesn't mean you put a man in jail because he doesn't support diversity, and that's what they did with David Duke. He's in jail because he said on his website, this war against Iraq is being fought on behalf of Israel. I don't think David Duke had tax problems. I think they set him up just like they set up Matt Hale, just like they set up Ernst Zundel, just like they tore down Trent Lott, and just like they tore down Jim Moran. I am a white person and I have the right to support the white race. That doesn't make me a bad person. I'm a white person and I support the white race. I don't believe in hurting any race. But I think all races have the right to survive. I don't support the human race. I don't agree that the races should be destroyed, that we should be engaging in racial... That's what genocide is. Did you know that? Genocide means the destruction of a race. And I'm against it. And I'm certainly against it when it comes to my race. So that's where I stand on the issue. And I don't care if we were one color once. We were not one color 500 years ago, and I want my grandchildren to look like my grandparents. And that's my right. And it doesn't make you a bad person to want your grandchildren to look like your grandparents. I don't have to evolve. I don't think it's evolution. I think it's a crock of shit. I disagree with multiculturalism and multidiversity. For example, what we did in Bosnia was a mistake. I have the right to love my own kind. I have that right to love whoever I want to love. That's a basic human right. My own family, my own kind. I let you love who you want to love. I'm going to love who I want to love. This state-imposed religion of multiculturalism and diversity is flawed. I don't have to love all people equally. I can love my family more than I can love your family. Because human beings have the right to love who they want to love. To strip them of that right is to strip them of their humanity. I love my own kind, and I expect respect for that. Because love by nature involves choice. Love by nature involves preference. If you love all human beings, it's like saying you love no human beings, because you're saying you prefer no one over anyone. Therefore, when the Iraqi soldier comes into your home, you can say, oh, well, you can kill my husband because I love you just as much as I love my husband, and that's not human. I am a white person. I'm not going to be drilled down and made wrong because of the fact that I'm white. Everybody is accusing me of being a racist because I'm white. I have the right to be white. I have the right to be white. And let's continue with the discussion about Iraq. And I do not hate Jews. I simply think that this war is on behalf of the Jew. That is what I think. And so do many other people, and they've been put in jail, and they've been stripped of their leadership position because they are telling the truth. This war is not for America. This is for Israel. So when you talk about America first, you should not be supporting this war, because this war serves no one but Israel. My race is going to exist. The white race is not going to bow gracefully off the stage of humanity because of some philosophical position. My race has been here, is here, and is going to stay here. Bosnia. We decided that the Muslims and the Christians should learn to get along. So when the Christians started telling the Muslims that they couldn't invade their country, we bombed them for a whole year to to teach them the beauty of multiculturalism and diversity. And we put the Muslims in power, and then the Muslims started killing off the Christians, driving them out of what had been their homeland. So we bombed the Muslims for a year until we realized we couldn't teach them the glories of multiculturalism and diversity, that it was impossible to make two culturally opposed people get along. So we decided that maybe bombing them was never going to teach them how to love, and we backed out, and we apologized. And we said, gee golly gosh darn, we just don't understand why these two people, these Christians and these Muslims, couldn't get along. I guess we were naive, is what our president said as he left the Bosnian theater. I guess we were naive to think that we could make these two divergent cultures get along. He didn't finish the sentence, which would have been by bombing them for two solid years. That's how insane we have become. This false religion of multiculturalism and diversity, which has no basis in fact or reality, is costing us everything to force people to believe in this false god. We are bombing people and bombing people and bombing people to teach them the beauty of this new kind of love, taking people who cannot get along and forcing them to live together. Now, we're doing a different thing. We've decided to turn the Middle East over to Israel because Israel wants us to, and Israel controls our government. So, no, this isn't about oil, and it isn't about retaliation for 9/11. It's another harum-scarum treasonous act on the part of a treasonous president who has made a decision behind closed doors to throw the United States into the dipsy dumpster in order to please Israel. Our borders go unguarded. 800,000 illegal immigrants come across our borders laughing at us because we have no moral integrity, we have no sovereignty, and we are emptying our treasury and expending at least 300,000 American lives who are potentially being slaughtered in this war against Iraq, a stupid little country that is not particularly interesting, because Israel doesn't give a fuck about America, and neither does our Israel-controlled government. That is called treason. What do you expect people of the United States to do when they see their president committing treason in front of their eyes? What do you expect us to do? Be loyal to a traitor? Agree that the sovereignty of the United States of America should be shit-canned for Israel? You're not going to see that happen in America. People are not going to take this lightly. They're not going to be real happy when they find out that Michael Chertoff, who is the head of Homeland Security, has allowed three cells of Israeli spies to go home to Israel for safe harbor. Three cells of spies. One of them was 200 strong. There were 200 Israeli spies discovered by Michael Chertoff in Northern California acting undercover as artists, pretending to be artists, knocking on doors of politicians and getting secrets. Michael Chertoff, a Jew, the head of Homeland Security, sent them home to Israel without a murmur. Two more cells of spies were found. There was one cell that was found right at the base of the Twin Towers. As the Twin Towers were falling, they were dancing, they were singing, they were taking pictures, they were busted. Were they prosecuted? No, they were sent back home to Israel, the home state of the head of Homeland Security, appointed by your president and mine, who is a traitor to the United States of America because he puts Israel first. Nothing's going to stop this war. This war was decided a long time ago before today. And it has nothing to do with 9/11. Nothing. So, do you mind if we try to figure out what it is about? since nobody will tell us? I have no clue. I have absolutely no clue what this war is about. The only thing I know is that it doesn't benefit anybody but Israel. This war will put Israel into power in the Middle East, which is a position that we had expected Saddam Hussein to take. About, I don't know if it was 20 years, 15 years, or 10 years ago, we all decided we liked Saddam Hussein because he was a moderate Muslim. We thought he'd be a good, strong influence in the Middle East. We pretty much set him up. We didn't mind when he went into Iran. We thought that was okay. And we didn't really mind when he went into Kuwait. Really. But Israel did. Israel didn't like the idea of Saddam Hussein getting so much control in the Middle East, because Israel wants to be the fair-haired boy in the Middle East. Israel was jealous of Israel has always been jealous of Saddam Hussein, because we've always liked Saddam Hussein. So Israel put her foot down in the Gulf War and told President Bush that he was not going to get into office unless he fought against against Iraq. And President Bush did what he was told. He did the war in the Gulf, and he did get the presidency. And Israel was happy. Now we've been attacked in 9/11, and somebody's decided to use this as an opportunity to finish the job of deposing Saddam Hussein so that Israel can have control of the Middle East. Israel has always believed that Israel should extend from Egypt to Iraq. They've always said that. When David Ben-Gurion accepted the terms of the partition plan, he made it very clear this is just the beginning. The first thing that the Israelis did was drive out the resident Palestinians. 700,000 of them were murdered, raped, and otherwise encouraged to get the hell out of their homeland of 2,000 years and go over to their side of the partition plan. That wasn't enough for Israel. Israel, after expelling those 700,000 Palestinians from the Israel side of the partition plan, Israel then expanded into the Palestinian part of the partition plan, taking half again of the part of the Palestinians' property. And in the next war, they simply invaded, and that's the way things stand now. The Palestinians have been pushed over to the farthermost part of their side of the partition plan, and bulldozers are coming in on a more or less daily basis, bulldozing down their homes, using this ridiculous statement that they're being terrorized as an excuse to bulldoze all of these homes down so that they can put up a suburb. And that's what they're doing. They put up high-rise buildings. First they bulldoze down all the shacks that belong to the Palestinians, then they put up a high-rise, and then Jews from all over the world come and move in on Palestine's side of the road. So that's the story of what's going on in the Middle East. Israel is taking over, and we're helping her. And there's nothing beautiful about it. It's pure treason. What makes it treason? It wouldn't be treason if we were just helping out a friend. That wouldn't be treason. It might be aggressive. It might be war crimes, but it wouldn't be treason. What makes it treason is that our own country is going to hell. The borders are going unpatrolled. Nobody's taking care of the infrastructure. We are setting up conditions for terrorism to destroy what's left of what we've got. Our treasury is being depleted, and our own American lives are being sacrificed. That's what makes it treason. All of this self-sacrifice that America has been talked into by the Jew serves only the Jew. That's what makes this treason. And this is the oldest argument that I can remember to support war. We should go in and kill the enemy because it's not as bad as women having abortions. That's the argument. War is good and abortion is bad. The argument is we should not listen to statements that war is bad for children if those statements are made by people who support abortion, because abortion is more evil than war. I would like to dispute that argument. First of all, it is wrong to kill women and children in an unjust war. Sending a bomb a minute for the next 48 hours over Baghdad, which is what Bush is going to do, is not going to make the lives of those women and children better. It's probably going to traumatize them for the rest of their lives. So I really don't think you can justify this aerial attack, which is going to last 48 hours and is going to release one bomb every minute for that 48 hours on the basis that it's good for the women and children. And I say that in spite of the fact that in some people's eyes I am morally reprehensible because I support abortion and most especially partial birth abortion. Now, you've been told that partial birth abortion is a terrible crime against a baby because it crushes the skull of the baby and sucks the brains out of the baby's head. And that is true, because that is the only way you can remove a baby without endangering the life of the mother. So when someone is pleading the cause of the unborn baby, what you don't understand is they are in favor of the ancient Catholic doctrine, which states, when one must die, let it be the mother. And these Catholic butchers, for centuries, have been slaughtering women on the birth table because women were seen to have so little value that they were killed so that the baby might be born. And I object to that treatment of women. And I think anyone who dehumanizes women to that extent should not be in charge of moral decisions. Now, there is another case in which a partial birth abortion takes place. And that's in a case of a severely deformed baby which has little or no chance of survival and whose survival will be the cause of an incredibly painful life of the baby. Most of us don't have the opportunity, thank God, of seeing these pranks of nature because only doctors see them, which is why we've only had doctors in charge of these decisions instead of politicians. But doctors have known forever that sometimes nature makes a mistake and a child is born without arms or legs or a brain, or sometimes the brain is spilling out over the guts, or there's different abnormalities that create a child that's born in severe intractable pain with no hope of recovery. And in the past, usually the doctor chose to terminate the life of that baby rather than go through that hideous death process. Today, what our highly moral male chauvinist pigs have decided is that the mother should be killed, the baby should be born in this severe intractable pain and hooked up to tubes until gratefully, eventually, death comes. But sometimes death doesn't come for a long, long time. And so thanks to the concern and care of these so-called ethical moral arbiters, these nitwits, these religious right fanatics from hell, the child does live on for years on tubes in severe intractable pain. And that is the result of putting moral decisions which should be left to the mother who really does care about the baby and the doctor who understands the professional repercussions of what's going to happen to the baby and to the mother. That's what happens when you take the decision out of these proper decision makers and put them into the hands of vicious, religious, primitive nuts. I think that we've learned why the world is against this war by reading the news and getting all of the reasons. First and foremost, the world views America as being unfair, unjust, giving greater preference to Israel, who is in much more violation of United Nations policies than is Iraq. We're not being fair. That's what they're telling us. China, Egypt, and a couple of other countries said they not only opposed the war, they said the reason they opposed the war was because we needed to look at our relationship with Israel. So they made it very clear why they're opposed to this war. They don't like us favoring Israel over Iraq. And well, they should. After all, Iraq is not the country that's out of kilter with the rest of the Arabian states. Iraq is a Muslim state. All of Arabia is Muslim. Israel is the interloper as a Jew. Israel is the only country in the whole Middle East region that is not Muslim. So why would we favor the troublemaker? We put Saddam Hussein in a preeminent position over the other Muslim states, favoring him with money and munitions, because of all the Muslim states, he was the most modern, and we thought that he could be a stabilizing influence on the Middle East. And there was no problem with that. He was fine. We liked him. He dressed in modern Western style. He didn't make his women wear burqas. He educated his people. He did not use torture as part of the statecraft. And frankly, I believe all of this information we're getting about him using torture now is atrocity propaganda, because every war always programs its people with atrocity propaganda. So you have to assume that a lot of what you hear is atrocity propaganda. But before we had all this atrocity propaganda, our view of Saddam Hussein was that he was a pretty decent guy. That's why we put him into a position of power. Then, when he attacked Iran, we thought that was fine too, because we didn't like Iran very much. Iran had been being run by this real nutbag, Khomeini, who was making people obey the ancient Muslim law. I mean, he went way back in history. He put him in the Stone Age. They were stoning women to death for not wearing burqas in public under this guy Khomeini, and we hated Khomeini. So we didn't object at all when Saddam Hussein went into Iran. We thought that was fine. And nobody objected to the Kurds getting caught in the crossfire either at that point, which was nothing more than that. They just got caught in the crossfire in a war between Iran and Iraq. They were not gassed by Saddam Hussein. We know that. So that's just more atrocity propaganda. Then, poor old Saddam Hussein was in the position that we're going to be in very soon, which is that he had won the war against Iran, but he has spent all of his country's money on the war. He had depleted the treasury, as Bush is doing to us. He had no workers anymore. They were all soldiers. What was he supposed to do? He had all these soldiers revved up for war, and he needed money desperately. So he went into Kuwait to replenish his treasury. And that, there was nothing wrong with that, because Kuwait had been part of Iraq before the British took it away from him. So he thought, you know, who cares? And nobody did. Except who? Guess who? Israel cared. Israel cared desperately, because Israel didn't want to see Saddam Hussein get into a position in preeminence in the Middle East. Israel wanted to own the Middle East. Israel made it clear when they first moved in, this was just the beginning, they were never going to settle for their part of the partition plan. They want everything for Israel to be from Egypt all the way up to Iraq. That's their idea of Israel. And they have been expanding and expanding and expanding since day one. And everything they tell you is a lie. They were not attacked on all sides innocent as they were by five Arab states. The truth is, the first thing they did when they hit the shores was drive out 700,000 resident Muslims, which they swore they would not do. They did that. The five Arab states retaliated against them. They then pushed the borders of Palestine into 50% further into Palestine. In other words, they grabbed part of Palestine's land after they pushed the Palestinians off their own side. They then did some land grabbing on Palestine. And now they're not even happy with that. They're bulldozing down little villages and building up high-rises in what's in what is the very last portion that belongs to Palestine, and they tell you on the news media that they're being attacked. I think that's why the world is not happy with this war, because the world is not crazy. It sees what's going on, and what's going on is that America is in bed with a rogue terrorist state and is about to send one bomb a minute into Baghdad, which is going to terrorize and traumatize the women and children. And what is the reason they give? We have to save the women and children. What rot! And which of the three great races are going to die if the English, the Americans, and the Australians all die? You're talking about the white race. We are again talking about a war in which the white race looks to be one step closer to extermination. And when have we seen this happen before? The Second World War. When, I wish I knew. I can't remember the death count on that, but it was millions. Millions of white people died during the Second World War. 65 million were killed by the Russian communists. 30 million Germans were killed by the Allies. Even after the Second World War, the death count against the white race was between 10 and 20 million Germans, depending on which book you read, that were purposely starved, shot, and assassinated by the Allies after the Second World War. That's a violation of the Geneva Convention. But the white race was targeted by extermination by the Jews. In payment for all the trouble they went through in the Middle Ages, they set up communism, and they just started slaughtering white people. And they set up World War II, and they got white people to fight white people. You can read in their textbooks, they are out to exterminate the white race. Where do you think they got the idea of lying about Hitler and saying he tried to exterminate the Jews? Because they were just projecting their own decisions to get into preeminence globally over the ruling race, which is the white race, by exterminating the white race. So once again, we're going into war on behalf of the Jews. And who's going to be killed in this war? Gee golly, it looks like white guys again. English, Australian, and American. This is really pathetic. It's pathetic that white people take this. Why don't we rise up against the Jew? Why don't we fight communism in a meaningful way for the first time in history and say, no, we won't go? Why don't we do that? Why do we keep making it illegal to tell the truth? Hurling stones at people who say, hey, look, we got a problem with Israel. Israel is not acting right. Israel is killing Palestinians. Israel is stealing property. Israel is controlling our government. Israel is making us fight against Iraq because Israel is jealous of Iraq. And why don't we do that? Why don't we show a little gumption and just, you know, dare to say no to Israel? It's just unthinkable that Americans, British, and Australian would give their lives so that Israel can take over control of the Middle East and have what Israel has wanted since before the creation of Israel, which is to own all of the property from Egypt up to Iraq. It's just really, really sad. And if you'd study communism, you'll find out that 90% of the people who controlled communist Russia were Jewish. 90% were Jewish. And what was one of their main goals, besides getting in control of world politics and creating a world totalitarian state? Their next goal, right up there with the first one, was to exterminate the great white race. You guys ought to wake up. You say you're against genocide and you support the extermination of the white race every day of your lives. This war is just another step toward exterminating more white people. It's just awful, really.